Good morning and happy Wednesday. Welcome to the Capital Investment Committee. We are thrilled that you are here. I just have to say before we start hearing presentations, I was a little disappointed last Wednesday when I held the gavel. I think I'm pretty funny, but this crowd did not really laugh like they normally do. So I hope, you know, we get some more laughter in today. What's that? Well, it's not here yet, so hold on. All right, so first up, we got a busy day today, as always. First up, we're going to have President Peasley up from the St. Paul College. So if you want to make your way up to the testifying table with your team, that would be amazing. And then next, we're going to have President Seymour from the Alexandria Technical College. As you all know, that is the city that is easy to get to and hard to leave. And so with that, President Peasley, you may state your name for the record and proceed.
Excellent. Good morning. Good morning, Chair Franson and Chair Lee and members of the committee. Thank you so much for this opportunity to present our request for $34.8 million in bonding funds for the St. Paul College's Academic Excellence Project. I'm Dee Dee Peasley, President of St. Paul College, and with me today is Scott Wilson, our Vice President of Finance and Operations. Although this is not part of the HEPA request for Minnesota State, in many ways this is an asset preservation project. This project represents the first comprehensive campus-wide renovation since our facility was constructed in the 1960s. Sometimes we think asset preservation isn't as exciting as new construction, but as shown by our building, we are excellent stewards of state resources, and the impact of your support will be felt for generations to come. As Minnesota's most diverse and one of the oldest institutions within Minnesota State, we've been serving our community since 1910. St. Paul College plays a critical dual role as a comprehensive community and technical college. We train the pipe fitters, we teach the welders, and we educate the nurses. We are deeply committed to preparing students for seamless transfer to four-year institutions while serving as a primary engine for workforce development in our region. We are your neighbors when you are in session at the Capitol, and we are your cybersecurity professionals and your accountants when you head home to your districts. We transfer students to all corners of the state, and our alumni are making Minnesota a better place to live. Our commitment is reflected in our diverse student body of over 11,000 credit and non-credit students, and I'm showing some of the quick facts about our students on the slide. 65% of our students are students of color, 59% are first-generation students, and 54% receive financial aid or scholarships. These numbers represent real Minnesotans achieving economic mobility through an education that creates a foundation for further education or propels them into immediate career success in our community. And our enrollment is growing. We have seen steady growth since the pandemic. We are currently up over 7% this spring, 15% for the upcoming summer term, and while it's early yet, we are also on target for an enrollment increase for fall of 2025. Enrollment is growing in programs that matter to Minnesota and to St. Paul, but our ability to add programs is limited by inefficient spaces designed and built in the 1960s.
Good morning. Our project has been in development for nearly
Sir, please state your name for the record and proceed.
I'm sorry.
Thank
Scott
you.
Scott Wilson.
And what is your role?
Vice President of Finance and Operations at St. Paul College.
You.
Yes. So our project has been in development for nearly a decade. In fact, you may remember us because you generously funded the design phase of our project, awarding us $1.6 million in 2023. This design phase is underway, and we are on track to be shovel-ready this year. Our project is ranked number 2 in the Minnesota State Systems Capital Request, second only to the HEPA funding. The project fully aligns with our comprehensive facility plan, which identified critical needs for modernizing our single building campus. We've conducted multiple pre-design studies, refining the project to maximize its impact while maintaining fiscal responsibility. The $34.8 million request will transform over 150,000 square feet of our campus to create a centralized student service, modernize classrooms, support high-demand programs that lead to living wage careers, right-size flexible learning spaces, and upgrade building systems, and eliminate well over $4 million in deferred maintenance while also reducing total square footage on our campus.
Our project goes far beyond physical renovation. It's about reimagining how we teach and support our students. We're creating a holistic approach to student success through the following improvements. During the pandemic, we learned that while we can effectively teach online, the vast majority of our students thrive in and prefer in-person learning. They recognize the significant value of direct interaction with our dedicated faculty and the support they receive on campus, alongside the collaborative learning environment fostered by being in the classroom with their peers. We are committed to supporting in-person, online, and hybrid learning models and right-sizing our spaces to match actual enrollment needs. We're transforming how students access critical services by creating a Main Street model and converting our antiquated theater space into a centralized student services hub. We're making support more visible, welcoming, and easy to navigate. And we're designing spaces that foster collaboration and peer-to-peer mentoring. These aren't just rooms, they're communities of learning where students can support each other, share ideas, and create networks that will connect them beyond college. These improvements will create spaces that inspire, support, and empower the next generation of Minnesota's workforce. Our commitment to education goes far beyond classroom walls. St. Paul College is a critical engine of economic mobility and workforce development for Minnesota. Let me share some powerful numbers that demonstrate our impact. 43% of our graduates continue their education, transferring to over 231 four-year colleges and universities. This means that we are providing immediate workforce solutions, and we are also creating pathways to advanced education. 332 businesses in our community, state, and across the nation employ St. Paul College graduates. Our alumni enter careers that strengthen Minnesota's economic ecosystem. Our economic impact is substantial and measurable. When you invest in St. Paul College, you're investing in Minnesota's future workforce. We're not just educating students, we're building the economic backbone of our state, one graduate at a time. This renovation is about creating opportunities that ripple through families, communities, and our entire state economy.
This project extends beyond teaching and learning. It also is about responsible stewardship of our state of Minnesota resources and our environment. Take our theater, for example. We're not just repurposing a space, we're strategically transforming an underutilized area into a centralized student services hub while eliminating millions in deferred maintenance costs. By converting this space, we're creating a more efficient, accessible Main Street for our student services and removing a significant financial burden. This renovation represents a holistic approach to sustainability. We're not just updating a building, we're reimagining how our physical space can work smarter, more efficiently, and with greater purpose. Every aspect of this project is designed to reduce our operational footprint while expanding our ability to serve our students, support our workforce, and contribute to Minnesota's economic vitality.
As we conclude, we respectfully request your support for our project. Together, we can transform education, empower students, and build a stronger Minnesota. We appreciate your time today and your attention. Scott and I are now happy to answer any questions that you may have about this request. Thank you.
Members, any questions? President Peasley, the first phase, if that were to be funded, what is your plan for your second phase?
Thank you for your question, Chair Franson. As we've indicated, we are in the design process right now with the funds that we receive for the full amount of the project. That will be determined as we go into the design phase and when we know what funds we're receiving. We anticipate that we can actually self-fund some of it and also do some fundraising.
Okay, great. We'd like to hear that. Members, any other? Oh, Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. I'm still trying to figure out how to ask the question, sorry.
Sometimes people like to form their question before they decide to ask the question.
How much of the students' time, do online versus physical being there?
President Peasley.
Thank you so much for the question. And we actually just ran these numbers right now. About 30% of our students take an online class. They are not attending full time. We are a very active, visible on-campus presence. Our students are an active, visible student presence on campus, so they're taking classes. If you think about like our trade and technical programs, our health science programs, our service programs like cosmetology and culinary, they need to be in person in order to do those things, right. Welding. And so we actually have a very active campus. Most of our students are there in person.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if the reason I'm struggling with this is because there has, you know, I'm not trying to force students to the campus, but the idea of learning at home and not leaving your home or wherever you may be, it's intriguing. But for some reason, up till now, we always had to be present to learn. That was the rule. You went to school to learn. And now we're flirting with this idea of you don't have to be there to learn. You can do whatever you want. You can still learn. But are we? You know, the question, have we measured it? Are we as smart as we used to be? Are we more intelligent? What is the deal? And, you know, when we're starting to put combined, you know, over $70 million into campuses to make them more functional, but if no one's coming here, you know, is there a way we can say, if you're going to be a student, you have to be on the campus X amount of times? Because I can tell you from when our government was closed here, downtown St. Paul felt it. There's no one buying lunches. There's no one moving around. It's an economy. And do colleges contribute to an economy? And without saying the word forcing them there, you know, if we encourage them to come to the campus, do they spread the economy? And I've got all these questions, and I'm trying to figure out, have you guys even explored any of this? Have you looked at it? Because it makes it easier for me to make a decision whether I want to invest $35 million to a group of people who say, I don't have to be there. I can stay at home. So thank you, Madam Chair.
President Peasley, would you like to take a stab at that?
I absolutely would. I think you're exactly right. I think what we're trying to do as an institution is provide options for our students, but also leverage what technology can provide. So meaning that you may be in an on-campus class, but maybe there are some technology components that will actually help with your learning. We actually do have programs where you are required to be in person. They're called our programs, and a lot of times they are in the trade and the technical programs where they need to be done on campus. But I will say, I think I am one that believes in the power of attraction rather than telling somebody what they have to do. And I think what we're seeing is that our students believe that they can learn better in the classroom. And I was just at orientation just this last spring, and I was sitting down with students, and I had students telling me, I don't want to do online learning. I miss being in the classroom. So we do believe that students learn best in a modality that actually leverages both technology as well as in-person instruction.
Thank you, President Peasley, and thank you, Mr. Wilson, Vice President Wilson, for your presentation today. Members, especially Representative Scraba, if you have further questions, you may take them offline. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for your time. Next up, we have Michael Seymour, President of the Alexandria Technical and Community College, to discuss the transportation project. Mr. Seymour, you may state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Franson, Chair Lee, committee members.
My name want to just speak into the mic a little bit more.
My name is Michael Seymour, president of Alexandria Technical and Community College, often referred to as Alex Tech. In the city of Alexandria, the city that is easy to get to but hard to leave. The chamber president makes us learn that when we come to town. And the chair. So we really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about our transportation project, which looks to replace a 1960s vintage building. Alex Tech today is a very vibrant campus. So in terms of the online, we do have an online audience, but it's largely military. We are an in-person college. And our enrollments have been going up the last 5 years. We're at 2014 levels currently. Alex Tech is truly Minnesota's college in that we have all 87 students from all 87 Minnesota counties represented in our student population. The college has a long-standing reputation for meeting Minnesota's workforce needs. Our transportation center project will ensure the college's vitality and viability for many years to come and promises a significant return on investments for our students and the state of Minnesota. So with the chair's permission, I would like to turn it over to one of our very important industry partners.
Welcome to the committee. You may state your name for the record and proceed.
Ann Laporte. Good morning. I'm Ann Laporte. I work as the Vice President of Human Resources at Ziegler Cat, and I'm here to join today to talk a little bit about the impact that the Alex Tech Diesel Technology Program has for us. So just a little bit of history. Ziegler's a 110-year-old business. We're based here in Minnesota. We have about 1,700 employees across the state, about 20 locations across the state as well. You may be particularly familiar with us this time of year when there's a lot of heavy equipment doing road construction. A lot of times that's Caterpillar equipment. But you may not be quite as familiar with some of the other things that we do. We supply generators to things like water treatment plants across the state, supplemental power, backup power to things like hospital systems and prisons. We partner with the Massey Ferguson's, which are made in Jackson, Minnesota. We sell and service those across the state, doing a lot of the farming that's happening this time of year, producing and selling Fendt tractors that are up north in northwestern Minnesota planting sugar beets this time of year. We also sell and service haul trucks up on the Iron Range and taking care of the steel industry up there, making those go 24/7. But we're also expanding and evolving around supplying things in the renewable energy space, such as electric vehicles and then the battery storage power that helps support those different things across our infrastructure as well. All this to be said, this is made possible because of the diesel technicians that work for us. Diesel technicians in today's world, I like to describe, are a little bit more like part electrician and part engineer, but they're someone that likes to work with their hands. And so the things that they have to have as their foundational learning are complexities like things such as thermodynamics, hydraulic systems, electrical diagnostics, a lot of things that after working at Ziegler for 13 years, I have no idea really what all of that means. But my point is to say that it really is impressive to see the work that these individuals do. They have to have critical thinking skills. They have to have independence. They have to be someone that can be creative. And that's all above and beyond the technical learning that they have in the classroom. Like many other skilled trades, diesel technicians are hard to find right now, and they continue to retire at a higher rate than they're entering the workforce. The only way to solve for that is to generate and create more people coming into the space. So this requires having strong programs to be able to prepare these students adequately. This type of work, you can imagine, can be dangerous. It can be really complex, and we're really fortunate because Minnesota does have some strong diesel programs across the state. Like Michael shared, Alex Tech is known for being one of the strongest programs in the Midwest. They consistently have a waiting list for students to join the diesel programs. So employers like Ziegler, we rely on these students, on the school to be able to prepare these students to come into our workforce. And it's not just located within Alexandria. We have students across really all four corners of the state and within the Twin Cities as well. I started my career as a recruiter at Ziegler, and I had the opportunity to do a lot of interviews at Alex Tech to be able to support the internship program. And one of the things I love about my job is I continue to be able to have those relationships over time. When I go to a branch, I connect with people, and to be able to see individuals, in some cases, continuing to stay working in the shop or the field, and in some cases, you know, taking on new career interests. So they really come into our workforce, being prepared to take on more as their career may evolve. So just to wrap up my portion, supporting Alex Tech's expansion will allow for more students to join the program and to ensure that we have a supply of skilled technicians ready to work on these critical types of projects. It will allow for advanced technology to remain competitive with among other programs and to properly prepare these students for entering the workforce for us. Alex Tech has proven in our experience to be a good steward to our communities by preparing these graduates for this important work. Thanks.
Thank you for your presentation. President Seymour, the last capital project that Alec Tech did was in 2007. Can you discuss with the body your debt limit, what that looks like, and the effects that the inflationary cost of the projects and how rural schools could possibly be squeezed out?
Chair Francis and members, so our last capital investment was in 2007 was for a law enforcement building. So we carry the debts for the debt service for 20 years. So this project will come online about the time the debt service on the prior capital investment falls off. So budgetarily, this the imposition of this project will never equal more than 1.5% of our operations our operating budget. One thing, and I know you talked yesterday some, I watched the session online, is the complexity of what to do going forward. And not to complicate that further, but one of the things that will happen and is happening to a school like ours would be that we essentially get priced out of the opportunity for a new space. Because as these projects inflate, there will become a number where we cannot impose that level of debt service on our budget. We're not quite at that number yet, but we're watching that number. And so actually in the end, phasing turns out to be a better approach for us, because instead of carrying the $35 million, we'll carry the $25 million and look to raise funds for the balance, which will serve the campus long-term better.
Thank you for that, President Seymour, and we're happy to hear that you're willing to fundraise for the remaining balance. That we appreciate that. Members, do you have any other further questions or comments? Quick, and then we got to move on.
Well,
thank you, Representative Scraba.
I know Alexandria is a hub. I'm from Ely. They have a law enforcement program. They actually share a lot of students, go back and forth, it seems. But getting back to your equipment, do the Teamsters, do the 49ers, do any of those help or come to your campus? Are you familiar with any of them? Do they try to recruit your people there?
President Seymour.
Chair Franson, Representative. There's an interesting dynamic in some of these high demand areas in that we do not bill individuals for many of them. There are third party payers, meaning they will come in represented by a company and all their tuition and fees will be paid by that company in return or in exchange for an employment agreement for 2 years of employment following graduation. So we have a number of students then that are already promised to the various industries. In terms of the labor unions, we do not have affiliation with them.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your presentation, President Seymour. We appreciate your time, and thank you for making your way down to the committee, Ms. Laporte. Thank you for your work. All right. Next up, we are going to have Representative Schumacher with the City of Slayton, followed by Representative Patty Anderson. Is she here? Okay, great. And then we'll have Representative Nelson. So if you guys want to make your way back to behind the testifying table so you can just keep on moving. Members, you have about 4 minutes. And if you have less than that, even better, because we are a little behind on time. So to your bill, Representative Schumacher, for the City of Slayton, you know, there is a rumor that you do slay a ton around here, so it is only fitting that you represent Slayton.
There we go, right off the bat.
Can confirm, Madam Chair. House File 1666, as you said, is for the City of Slayton for a child care center, and I will turn it over to my testifiers immediately.
Thank you, Representative Schumacher. Josh Melchow, City Administrator from the City of Slayton. To my left is Ashley Haken, the Board Secretary for the Wonder World Preschool Child Care Center, a nonprofit in Slayton. House File 1666 is $3 million for the construction of a new child care facility in the City of Slayton. It is a regional project, even though the money would be going to the City of Slayton. We pull from all over Northern Nobles County and Cottonwood, Pipestone. Everybody comes to Slayton for child care depending on where their job is. So the situation is such that Wonder World has been going for over 50 years, and they are a nonprofit, have been the whole entire time. And they are losing their lease with the local Catholic Church that has housed them for those 50-plus years in 2026. And so we are in dire need of a facility. Being that they are a nonprofit, they don't have a whole lot of fund reserve to handle a construction project, nor the ability to handle a debt service, a payment annually in a large amount to pay for a construction loan. And so we're looking to get some assistance in that area, and kind of the funding scenario is on the back of your sheet there. So I will turn it over to Ashley, who will get into more of the specifics of Wonder World's needs. Thank you.
All right. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
I'm Ashley Haken. As he said, I am the board secretary for Wonder World. Kind of as he touched on, when we initially got started, We had a one-year timeline on this. So we had a lot of digging to do. We explored a couple of options, and they had to be ruled out due to small sizes, and that would result in us having to downsize. So one of the options we came up with was needing to build a facility in order to maintain status quo in our community. So there's an urgency in order to keep a child care facility open. He touched on the fact that if we do not receive funding, that we will likely not be able to remain open. We are able to sustain operations. However, if we have to maintain a debt service, that we are likely not going to be able to remain open because that is not something that was built within to our daily operations. Losing our lease was something that was very sudden. The local Catholic Church is combining so they can expand upon their ministries. Our facility is going to expand in order to be able to reach a capacity of 92 children, up from our current capacity of 76. I'll let you touch on what we have done for funding so far.
Yeah, so we have tried to get funding from everywhere. So we have committed $225,000 from the City of Slayton, Murray County School District, and Murray County and pooled TIF dollars. So specifically what that looks like is if you have a district that expires and you have increment left, you are able to turn it back to the county, and then if you get commitments from each of those taxing authorities, you can dedicate it to a specific project we have done. So Wonderworld has about $250,000 in reserves that they are willing to commit to the project, $100,000 from Murray County. We do have requests out for a much larger allocation from them, being that it is a county large impact project. And then the city is also looking at writing off the land and utility extension costs for the project as well. So,
all right, thank you.
Questions?
Thank you. Members, any questions, comments, concerns? Okay, sounds good. Thank you for making your way down to the great capital city and presenting today.
Thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Schumacher. You're like our most favorite popular person here. I haven't added up all the money that you've requesting, but you certainly are a frequent flyer of this committee. Thank you. All right. Before we move on to Representative Patty Anderson, we do have a quorum. We've had a quorum for a while, but I keep forgetting to say that. And so let's see here. Representative Myers, would you be willing to approve the minutes from April 29th? Is it April 29th?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes.
So moved.
All right. Thank you. Any questions, comments, concerns, members? Great. Minutes approved. Representative Patty Anderson, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is House File 232. This is a project in the city of Forest Lake where it's an intersection that comes together both State Highway 61, a county road, a city road, and it's a trailhead for a trail that runs all through Washington County, the Hardwick Creek Trail. The road itself is in terrible shape. There's very little off-street parking availability. We have stormwater issues, and I'm going to turn over to my testifier for the specifics. So.
Please state your name for the record, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Stotz. I'm the city administrator of Forest Lake. I'm also a civil engineer, and so have a very familiar background with this type of work. This particular project is, as Representative Anderson mentioned, is a collaboration between many different agencies, and as you can imagine, putting together funding for a project like this becomes very difficult. One thing that the city of Forest Lake is taxed with is that we're a regional hub, right? We are kind of the shopping center and the go-to center for a lot of our surrounding communities, smaller communities. And so we end up with a burden on us that includes two U.S. highways, Highway 61 and Highway 8. We have many state highways and county roads in our district as well that when those projects come due at the various agencies, we're expected to contribute our sort of our share of it. And cities don't often get a choice when we have to pony up for those type of things. And so we've had Highway 97, we've had Highway 61, we've got Highway 8 projects coming up, we've had county road projects in the recent future where we're expected to make our share for those projects. Unfortunately, this one just is too cost prohibitive for the city to participate in. And what that leaves us with is a really an incomplete project. It would end up being essentially a pavement maintenance project without any help from the legislature. And we'd hate to see that happen. We think it's an important regional connection. As Representative Anderson mentioned, this is an important connection between the trail, between Highway 61 and Highway County 33. There's a gap there in the trail. We'd love to have a grade separated trail, and that's a big part of this. The other main point I wanted to make is that this is a main connector between affordable housing. I think Forest Lake stands out amongst our suburban peers as someone who has a lot of multifamily housing. We have over 80 multifamily housing buildings in our city, and this trail and the road connection would make an incredible connection for those affordable folk housing units to make connections to the trail.
Thank you, Mr. Stotts. Members, questions? No? All right. Thank you for making your way down to the Capitol today. We appreciate your time. Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, members.
Representative Nelson, you're up with Pine City, followed by Representative Warwas and then Representative Harder. And members, remember to keep your comments short and let your testifiers shine. Representative Nelson, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. The House File 3444, it's a bill for wastewater treatment ponds, and I have the mayor of Pine City with me, as well as a city engineer. So I will turn it over to them, and thank you for hearing the bill today.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Good morning. My name is Kent Bombard. I'm the mayor of the city of Pine City. I'm here today to voice my strong support for Bill HF 344, requesting $7 million in state funding to upgrade and repair Pine City's wastewater treatment facility. This project may look familiar as it was included on the 2023 bonding tour and received visits from both bonding committees. The facility serves 1,825 properties across four communities, including Pine City, Henriette, Pekegama Lake Sewer District, and Cross Lake Sewer District, processing wastewater from nearly 30% of southern Pine County. Despite its importance, the facility has not seen significant upgrades in nearly 50 years. Improvements will boost performance, reduce operating costs, and install energy-efficient equipment, all while improving outflow water quality, protecting the Snake River just 8 miles upstream from its confluence with the St. Croix River. Pine County is Minnesota's second fastest growing county, and Pine City the eighth fastest growing city. We're planning for that growth, but our residents face economic challenges with a median household income of $43,686, well below the state average. Without state support, the cost burden on local families would be significant. We've taken steps locally, commissioning a rate and cost of service study with Ehlers, but state partnership is essential to make this project feasible. As a new father, clean water and healthy environment are deeply personal to me. This project isn't just about infrastructure, it's about investing in a sustainable future for the next generation. On behalf of the City of Pine City and our regional partners, I respectfully ask for your support of HF 344 and its critical $7 million investment.
Thank you. To your next testifier, you may state your name for the record and proceed.
Greg Anderson, the consulting engineer for the city. The Pine City wastewater pond system is a little over 106 acres, one of the largest ones in the state. Flow comes in through our screen building, which was installed in the 60s, and is a manual operated screen, meaning every day staff has to go and clean that screen to keep floatables and debris out of the pond system. From there, it goes into one of three aeration ponds where air is pumped through the bottom to introduce oxygen into the pond to start the treatment process. One of the original five blowers is still functioning, the other four do not, and we have many leaks along the system leading to inefficiencies of us getting aeration introduced into the ponds. From the three primary ponds, it goes into a secondary pond, and then it's finished in the clarifying pond and discharged twice a year. Pond discharge is only in the spring and the fall, and as the mayor said, it goes into the Snake River. Improvements include replacing the screen building with an automated system to reduce O&M and labor, and in replacing the aeration system with some sort of green energy, likely solar. We would really reduce the city's infrastructure costs there, and then riprap the banks of the outsides of all the ponds. Right now, they are do not riprap like you see on many lakes. That wave action and rodents get in there, burrow into the bank, and it impacts the integrity of the bank. So those are the improvements we are looking for support on. Thank you.
Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just quickly to the project funding on the handout, you said that you're asking for 3.5 from the federal government. So has that been secured? And then will the other three communities be contributing to the projects? Thank you.
Mr. Bomberg.
Yes, we are working with federal representatives to work to secure that funding right now. And with this rate study, we are working to adjust rates for our surrounding communities to make sure that everything is fair and equal.
Great. Further questions from members? All right, seeing none, thank you for making your way down to the Capitol. We appreciate your time. Thank you, Representative Nelson.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Warwas, City of Eveleth. And you brought treats, so thank you for that. We appreciate those goodies. And you may state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Representative Cal Warwas, representing the heart of the Iron Range in District 7B. And yes, I did bring treats. I recognize it's not necessary, as we've all been hitting this committee over and over, but they were such a hit last time, and I thought, you know, session's going to get long. So I'm actually disappointed that more of my colleagues aren't here to enjoy the cookies, but staff and guests, please feel free to fight each other for the what's left. So, but I'm pleased to present House File 431, a bonding request for the Progress Parkway project in the City of Eveleth. This project addresses serious traffic congestion and safety concerns near the Rockridge High School and Laurentian Elementary campuses, which are currently only accessible via U.S. Highway 53. The proposal includes a new 1.42-mile county state aid highway, a roundabout at Progress Parkway and Wolverine Way, and dedicated trails for pedestrians, bikes, ATVs, and snowmobiles. And I'm very pleased to have with me Jim Faldesi, the St. Louis County Public Works Director, who's a very capable man. I'll turn it over to him.
Thank you. You may state your name for the record and proceed.
Jim Faldesi, the St. Louis County Public Works Director. Thank you, Chair Franz and Chair, Co-Chair Lee and members of the committee. The handout is entitled St. Louis County Progress Parkway Project in blue. Kevin Gray, St. Louis County Administrator, is also in attendance today, supporting. St. Louis County is here today seeking state assistance to address a serious public safety issue. In 2023, the Rockridge School District constructed a new high school and elementary school, including athletic facilities, on the east side of Trunk Highway 53 in the City of Eveleth. Currently, all modes of transportation, the school campuses are only accessible via the signalized intersection of Trunk Highway 53 and Progress Parkway. This leads to hazardous traffic congestion at the intersection, especially during peak pickup and drop-off times. Traffic backups on the busy 55-mile-per-hour, four-lane divided highway extend for 1,000 feet in each direction every morning and evening. St. Louis County has stepped up with a solution to construct a secondary access road from the schools to the south, which will connect to Trunk Highway 37. The new County State Aid Highway 142 will be approximately 1.5 miles in length. The project will provide an opportunity to get the schools to get to the schools from Eveleth and Gilbert without having to use Trunk Highway 53 and provide a critical second access for emergency response. And although this project is primarily a safety project, it will open up access to hundreds of acres of city-owned and private land for economic development. The City of Eveleth has received $4 million in state bonding via the IRRRB for utilities along the new corridor. The proposed project is part of a larger package of projects. MnDOT and St. Louis County are investing $22 million in improvements on Trunk Highway 53, including three intersections and an interchange. St. Louis County is contributing $5 million to that project. The Progress Parkway Extension project under consideration today has been designed in coordination with those improvements on Trunk Highway 53 and enjoys MnDOT's full support. The project also has enjoyed broad public support and is the result of 8 public meetings. The county is seeking $8 million in funding for a $22.6 million project. Local funds will pay for at least 50% of the project, and the project under consideration can be phased, and the county would be open to an appropriation less than the $8 million requested. Please visit our project website with the link on the handout for more information. Thank you for your time and consideration. That concludes my presentation, and I will stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Faldesi. Members, questions? Representative Sexton, real quick.
Good morning. I thought I heard that the state commitment was $22 million, but that seems to be in your handout, the total project cost. So what was the MnDOT commitment?
Chair Mr. Francis.
Coincidentally, there are two projects at play here. MnDOT has a $22 million project on the trunk highway, of which we're contributing about $5 million to that project. Our project, which is a construction of a new roadway that parallels Trunk Highway 53, is also around that amount.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yes.
Thank you, Representative Sexton. All right. Well, thank you for making your way down from Eveleth to the capital city, Mr. Fildesi. We appreciate your time. And thank you, Representative Warwas. And also thank you for the cookies.
Thank you, Chair Francis.
Thank you.
All right, Representative Harder, and then we are going to go to Representative Quam, and then Representative Representative Gilman presenting for Representative McDonald. Representative Harder, to your bill.
Thank you, Chairs Francis and Lee, and members, for giving me the opportunity to present this bill for the city of New Auburn, located in Sibley County. And I will turn over to my testifiers, Kurt Reitz and Sam Fink, who can explain the project. Thank you.
You may state your name for the record and proceed. Welcome.
Chair Francis and Chair Lee, members. My name is Kurt Reitz. I'm a contract water wastewater operator that works with small communities, and one of the small communities I work for is New Auburn. New Auburn is about 60 miles west of here. New Auburn is a small town, but it provides a lot of people to Sibley County and the region and the Mentor area as employees. This is our first time we started back in with a Zoom call. So we're here again, and we're continuing to move forward, and our project is moving forward with funding through USDA, and Sam will cover that. But what we are looking at is wastewater treatment ponds, excuse me, spray irrigation, sanitary sewer and storm sewer, water main distribution, hydrants and water meters. We need major increases in size to our ponds to alleviate flooding, storm sewer additions for better draining our areas of the community that flood, and water system improvements for water quality. Our treatment ponds are aged and undersized. Spray irrigation fields are often overloaded and in violation of our state permit. Main lift station and forest main are in jeopardy of failure. We have leaking sanitary sewer systems that, like most communities, that adds additional water to the system that can't be handled. We also have collapsing sewer lines and sags. I'll skip over some of this. I'm going to go to our sewer rates. As you can see in the handout, it shows our sewer rates for a small community. When you've got less connections, your sewer rates are higher. But as an example, for a two-person household, which would be mom and pop or my wife and I, that's about $117 a month. Example for a four-person household, which would be a mom and pop and their two kids, it's about $313 a month. Our medium income is about $34,000. As you can see on the handout, we have PPL rankings. Our project has been accepted by USDA and is in underwriting right now, and Sam will cover some of that. You can see our project prices. What we're looking for in a bonding request was $9 million. But we're in the process now of working with USDA for funding that in multiple phases, which would be beneficial for us and I think for the state. I'll turn it over to Sam Fink.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Fink. You may state your name for the record and proceed.
Sam Fink with SEH. I'm the city engineer for the city of New Auburn. Like Kurt said, we are actively pursuing funding from USDA Rural Development. We've been working with them since 2020. We submitted our preliminary engineering report for the project in 2023. And we just received comments from them after 2 years of waiting that we have to address. So like Kurt said, we are proposing to phase the project into three separate phases. Each phase is about equal in cost, about $5.5 million apiece. Our request would be to have the bonding request be fund half of that. So $2.5 million for each phase of the project is what we would be asking from the committee. We won't know what kind of funding Rural Development will provide until they receive our comments and they get a funding package that won't be until the fiscal year of 26.
Thank you, Mr. Fink. Members, questions? Representative Scraba.
Thank you,
Shocker.
Chair. Yep. Your rates are good because they're high. You're not.
That is, rates are not good.
I know. I'm just. And what I'm trying to. You got me off my game. I'm sorry. Where's your are you getting any more people? You talked about how you're feeding some of the people coming here. Are you getting more growth? Are you getting more and more people? Are you getting land ready for sale, that sort of stuff? Thank you, Chair.
Yes, please tell us about your land you're selling.
Chair, New Auburn is a very small community. It's like most rural communities. There is not a lot of development. We're lucky if we can do one house a year, sometimes one house every 3 years. We don't have a lot of industry, so it's mainly a population that serves the employment needs of the area and the region around us.
Thank you, Representative Scraba, much like many of our little teeny tiny rural communities. All right, seeing no other further questions, thank you for making your way down to the Capitol, and it's nice to see you in person.
Thank you, members.
You're welcome. All right, with that, we are going to go next to Representative Quam, and then his person is online, and Vice Chair Fogelman is going to take over for a little bit because I have a student group from Osakis to go visit with. I'll be back soon, so I'm sure Marge will be, our Vice Chair Fogelman will keep you in stitches, too.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and continue with your testimony.
Hello, I'm Duane Kwa. My treat is to have the chair take a break from the committee. yes. And I represent part of Olmsted County and Dodge County. And it's an area where there's quite a bit of growth. Stuartville is bordered by I-90, has Highway 63 running through it, but it also has the airport just to the north of I-90. It's on the south of I-90. And there's a great deal of expansion of businesses, and the city is growing. And I believe the online testifier can get into more details, but it's bringing in a lot of economic activity to the area.
Thank you, Representative Quam. To our online testifier, please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony. I think you're muted, Mr. Schimmel, if you could unmute.
There we go. Bill Schimmel, City Administrator for the City of Stuartville. And thank you, Chair and members of the community committee. We're very appreciative for this opportunity. As Representative Quam pointed out, we're in the very southern part of Olmsted County in the rural area. The population has grown with us and High Forest Township. And with High Forest Township's limited resources and staff, our city council has agreed to help sponsor this project for improvements to 15th Avenue, which is a 1 mile stretch of road that has now become a vital artery for emergency services across the Rutt River. Right now, the only one is right through Stuartville on US Highway 63, but if that were to become incapacitated, this is the only closest, fastest alternate route that all of the emergency services would utilize, including the Stuartville Fire Department, which helps cover a 5-township area, the city of Racine, and we're the first backup to help the city of Rochester out at the airport. And so not only with our fire services, the Mayo Ambulance Services, and the Olmsted County Sheriff's services, these are the services that would need this artery as a backup. Obviously, with hospital and services to the north, any of these areas that are to the south need this backup road. And as you all know, with time being of the essence in emergency situations, the need for this alternate route is more important as the population has expanded, like Representative Baum commented. Our most recent traffic counts along this route have been 800 vehicles a day. and it has also become a commuter alternate route, and it's used by ag business as well to save on congestion in downtown Stuartville with Highway 30, State Highway 30, and U.S. Highway 63. The township has 40 miles of roadway, and this one-mile stretch usually takes up, from their records, about 50% of their maintenance budget. And so they are definitely been in favor of working with us, along with Olmsted County, and then the Rochester-Olmsted Council of Governments are all the supporters of this regional project that not only help all of us, but the most important thing is the safety issue. Be happy to know that the funds we would be requesting all are able to go toward the improvements of this roadway that obviously involve the resurfacing, but also help with the ditch and storm drainage issues in that area.
Okay, so thank you, Mr. Shimo. Can you wrap up?
And, so I think that covers everything I had.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, members? Seeing none, thank you, Representative Quam, and thank you, Mr. Schimmel, for testifying today. Next up, we have Representative Gilman. Following Representative Gilman, we have Representative Olson and then Representative Robbins. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Representative Don Gilman. Happy to be here to talk about Representative McDonald and I share some of our district together, and this is a great bridge project that we'd love to talk about. So our first testifier is online, I believe, and then we'll go to our next testifier.
Hi, I'm Thane.
If you can state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Absolutely. My name is Krista Cates, and I'm here representing a group of Minnesotans who are working hard to restore the historic Salisbury Bridge. It stretches across the North Fork River just west of Kingston, Minnesota, not just connecting two townships, but also generations of memories. For me and my family, it's been the backdrop of many, many photos as we can look back and watch my three boys and my daughter grow up, and most recently, my daughter's senior pictures of my son's engagement. Each summer, we gather our extended family and start many canoe trips in the shade of that historic bridge, and I will tell you what a view it is from down below. The bridge is a peaceful place when you can stand, listen to the river, and feel connected to something bigger than yourself. My husband's great-grandfather understood the importance of history as he made sure to pass that history down to his family, to Jeremy, to me, and now me to you. In 1899, prior to that, the bridge was a wagon crossing. And then in 1899, the bridge was constructed by the Hewitt Bridge Company and became one of Minnesota's first three-span steel truss bridges, and it remains standing as one of the few remaining today. It was named after Representative Salisbury, who was a government surveyor. He came to the area, fell in love with it, decided to uproot his family, settled just east of what would become the location of that bridge. He was a prominent member of his society, giving back, and he just loved it. And I just have to agree with him because I, too, love that area. The bridge isn't just a structure. It's part of our families, it's part of our communities, and it's part of our past. Unfortunately, since the closure in 2016, due to structural concerns, the bridge has been left to decay. It's now blocked off by two large concrete barriers on each end. The north end is eroding, and vandalism has damaged what time alone has not. Graffiti on the historic trusses and broken glass now mar this once beautiful landmark. The closure has also pushed ATV and snowmobile traffic onto busy Highway 24, creating a serious safety issue. However, restoring and reopening the bridge to vehicle traffic would once again provide safe passage, as well as preserve a vital part of our community and our state's story. We're not just asking you to save a bridge. We're asking you to protect a living piece of history for our children and their children. I thank you for your time and consideration, and I welcome you to take a road trip just west of the cities and come and visit this absolutely beautiful, historic Salisbury Bridge.
Thank you, Ms. Cates, for your testimony. Did Mr. Olson want to say anything?
I would like to say something. Thank you. My name is Steve Olson. I'm a bridge engineer with 40 years of experience. I've worked on dozens of historic bridges, and I'm a member of the Minnesota State Historic Review Board. My association with this bridge goes back to 2012, when we worked with Gale and others at Kingston to bring the bridge back into service after it was damaged by an errant vehicle. It was closed in 2016. After cracks were found in the bridge, the system worked. Inspectors found the cracks. It was closed. No one was hurt. No story. The plan for the bridge with this funding request includes steel repairs to the trusses. We plan to fix the members that were cracked and prevent others from cracking in the future. We plan to repair the supports and substructure units. We plan to upgrade the railing. The current railing has large gaps that would allow a child to fall through. We plan to paint the bridge to protect the investment of time and money in it. In my opinion, the most critical element needed for a successful historic bridge project is not steel or timber or concrete. It is a strong champion for the project.
Mr. Olson. With the interest of time, we're going to have to end it there. Members, any questions? You can also visit with them offline if you have any. Thank you, Representative Gilman, for making your way down and representing your city. Next up, we have Representative Olson. If you could state your name for the record and begin with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm Representative Bjorn Olson from District 22A. House File 1711 addresses critical housing access and infrastructure needs for the small city of Mapleton to move towards their newly built school. So I've got with me the mayor of Mapleton and the public works director. And I, with your permission, Madam Chair, I'd like the mayor to start with his testimony and then the public works director will finish.
Thank you. If you could please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. Good morning. My name is Jeff Annis. I'm the mayor of Mapleton, proudly known as the curling capital of Minnesota. Mapleton is a small but growing community located in Blue Earth County with a recorded population of 1711, ironically the same number as the House file bill. So I think that's a good omen. Over the past 20 years, the city has continued to expand its geographic footprint. The city has identified a project that addresses multiple needs: transportation, drinking water, fire protection, drainage, and wastewater. Specifically, we propose the reconstruction of Borkert Street and 8th Avenue Southeast with a new bituminous surfacing, curb and gutter, storm sewer system, and the extension of the water and sanitary sewer lines. Additionally, we plan to construct a treatment facility in accordance with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency regulations to manage the increased runoff from these improvements and support future development as outlined in our comprehensive plan. And, Madam, I'd like to turn it over to Public Works Chafee.
Thank you. If you could state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hunter Chafee, Public Works Supervisor for the City of Mapleton. In 2022, the new Maple River School was constructed, serving pre-K through 12th grade, approximately 850 students, on the southern edge of the city. That same year, the city of Mapleton, along with Blue Earth County, invested local and state dollars to improve the roadways immediately adjacent to the new school. However, some nearby roadways, including key school bus routes and primary entrances, remain gravel surfaces, preventing safety and accessibility challenges. HF 1711 will assist Mapleton in advancing our next phase of housing and commercial development. The infrastructure improvements proposed under this plan will open up approximately 50 or more residential and commercial lots, supporting future growth and economic vitality in our community. We respectfully request your support for HF 1711 to help us continue building a stronger, safer, and more prosperous Mapleton. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you for your testimony. Do we have any... Representative Scraba?
Really quick, thank you, Rep. Olson, for the party, I-90 party last night. I know you guys were instrumental in it, so thank you.
You're very welcome, Representative Scraba.
Anything further? Thank you, Representative Olson, and thank you for coming down to the Capitol.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Representative Robbins. After Representative Robbins, we'll have Representative Steer and then Representative Scrubba. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Vice Chair Fogelman, Chair Lee, and Chair Franson, wherever you are. We appreciate the opportunity. I'm Representative Kristen Robbins. I represent beautiful District 37A, and I'm here with the mayor of Kent Cook, the mayor of Loretto, and our fire chief, Jeff Luhr, and we are here to present House File, sorry, I don't have the number in front of me, 2787, House File 2787, which would provide for really important water infrastructure repair in our wonderful community. So Loretto is a small town in western Hennepin, 650 people, and they have already put a ton into this water main replacement, and we're just at the stage where we need help. So we're here to talk about that, and with that, I'll turn it over to my mayor.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Kent Cook, mayor of Loretto. As Representative Robbins mentioned, the city completed a capital improvement plan in 2019, and this project was identified as a high priority. It replaces aging infrastructure estimated to be from the 1950s or earlier, including water, sanitary sewer, storm sewer, utility replacements, and associated street reconstruction. This project is planned for 2026 and is phase two of our Hennepin County Road 19 water main replacement that was completed in 2024 with $890,000 in local bonding. In 2023, there was over 200,000 gallons of water used through this system to fight two large structure fires, which overburdened the system. And we've had numerous water main breaks along this line, most recently as of April 4th. So why state bonding? Locally, since 2021, we've locally bonded $3.4 million through debt levies and operating within a general fund budget of less than $1 million. So I'll go ahead and turn it over to Councilmember Luhr.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Jeff Luhr, council member and fire chief of West Suburban Fire District. The reason for this infrastructure upgrade is for fire service and fire protection. We cover approximately 50 square miles. We're in the process of getting another fire department to merge with us, so it'll be 70 square miles. About 10% of that area is hydrated, and our infrastructure, our water main infrastructure in Loretto, covers several cities. I mean, we use that for fighting fires in a rural area type setting. We cover the cities of Greenfield, Independence, Corcoran, and Medina, where there is no other type of water infrastructure in our area. So it's really important that we keep that up and we're able to fight fires and those kind of emergency services.
Thank you for your testimony. Do we have any questions from members? Seeing none, thank you, Representative Robbins, and you can proceed with your next bill and your testifiers.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair and members, we also have HF 2788, which is for stormwater pond redesign and improvement, and I will turn over to my testifiers about that. But I do want to just reflect, this is all for the city of Loretto, and what the chief talked about the water needs is extensive. We had an industrial fire there that literally the water main broke, and they had to truck water in, and it was a disaster. And obviously, they handled it beautifully, but I just want to highlight for members like how critical both of these projects are. Thank you.
If you could restate your name for the record and proceed.
Yep. Kent Cook, mayor of Loretto. In this House File 2788, this is for stormwater pond improvements before pre-design, design, engineering, and dredging and removal of sediment of the stormwater ponds that have exceeded their useful life. We completed our capital improvement plan in 2019. We did an assessment to review all of the sediment present in all the ponds throughout the city. Measurements were taken through the ice in the winter of 2019 with GPS coordinates, and sediment depth was considered to be estimated and further detailed surveying would be done if funding is approved. But usually these ponds have about a 20 to 30 year lifespan, and all of them currently are at that lifespan. We did complete one of these pond dredging projects in 2020 at a cost of $30,000, and then an additional one in 2024 at a cost of $120,000. So you can see there, you know, the price increases year over year have continued to go up. And I'll turn it over to Chief Luer.
Thank you, Mayor. Please state your name again for the record and proceed.
Jeff Luer, council member for the City of Loretto. He pretty much stated everything that I had to say.
Thank you. Members, do we have any questions? Representative Scraba.
Thank you. Do you have a number from PFA? Have you applied for any PFA for the stormwater?
Councilman?
Wastewater, sorry, thanks.
Or Mayor?
We have not looked into any PFA funding. I guess the last time I think we looked into it, it didn't sound like there was funding specifically for this type of a project.
Representative Scraba?
That's good, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Representative Robbins, for your, do you have any follow-up?
Just wanted to point out for the record that we are very proud of Chief Luer. He was Fire Chief of the Year last year.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you for making your way down and your testimony. Next up, we have Representative Steer. And then after that, we have Representative Scraba. Welcome. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, Vice Chair and members, Terry Steer, District 22B, and I'll pass it off to the testifiers.
Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I'll go first. Thank you. Chief Steer with the Le Sueur Police Department. Please don't take my name against me. Don't use that against me. I was told I did not need to bring any treats because his charm was enough. So I appreciate that. No, for the sake of time, if we do have any additional questions in regard to the police department specifically, I will be here, but I will go ahead and let my city administrator testify. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Steer. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Joe Roby, city administrator for the city of Le Sueur. Thank you. Very much for the time, distinguished members of the committee, Chair Lee. So the City of Le Sueur and Le Sueur Police Department are requesting $6 million in bond proceeds via House File 3207 to support the pre-design, design, construction, and equipment of a public safety center to house both the Le Sueur Police Department and the city's emergency management operations. The Le Sueur community currently has no dedicated space for its emergency management operations, and the police department is currently housed in what has now been a series of effectively hand-me-down facilities throughout the department's history. The current state of the police department is undersized, generally unwelcoming, despite the charm of our own police chief. And tactically, operationally, unsecure. The current space was vacated by the Le Sueur Fire Department and the Le Sueur Public Utilities in the early 2000s. The public safety needs of the area have only continued to grow in complexity as our community has grown, and our department has formed a proactive approach to community policing, which has been embraced fully by the Le Sueur community and surrounding area. And as such, the need for a safe, secure space in which to operate has become imperative. Now, the community of Le Sueur is approximately 4,200 in population. Our poverty rate is about 17%. 22% of children in the community live underneath the poverty line. Our population has an 18% rate of disability. And I cannot say enough about what the Le Sueur community has done in support of public safety over the last several years. Between 2021 and 2025, our police department expenses have increased over 57%. That has been supported completely by the community of Le Sueur. The taxpayers have supported the purchase of new equipment, are still paying off the former debt, the current debt for the last fire hall that was constructed. And quite simply, we're here before the committee today because we have asked everything we can of the taxpayers in the community of Le Sueur, and they have given everything they possibly can. State funding is being requested to support this significant capital this capital investment. And I thank you for your time. If there are any questions, we can certainly answer it.
Members, do we have any questions? All right, seeing none, thank you for making your way down to the Capitol. We appreciate your time and your presentation.
Thank you.
All right, next up, we have Representative Scraba. You have two bills up, Representative Scraba. And Representative Scraba has presented quite a bit here, and the dollar amount for his bills do not reflect the amount of talking he does in our committee. Please state your name for the committee, and you may proceed.
Representative Scraba, District 3A. I'm going to let Nate take care of what he wants to talk about.
Oh, that's shocking that you let somebody else do some talking. Representative Scraba, thank you. All right, you may state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Franson, committee. My name is Nate Ide. I'm the land commissioner for Lake County. I'm here today in support of House File 583. It's a request for funding for a Kwishwe Bridge over the Kwishwe River. It's part of the Ely Snowmobile Trail. It connects an important part of the county to Ely. It's one of the only trail connections from the range cities to the rest of the communities in Lake County, including Silver Bay and Two Harbors. Lake County has a strong history of supporting trail initiatives, starting in the early days of snowmobile and ATV trails to the Pier Hiking Trail, to now mountain bike trails and new ATV trails and snowmobile trails. It's an important part of our economy, especially in the winter when the tourism kind of dies down, but when there's snow and there's most of the Midwest seems to show up at our back door. So snowmobile trails especially are important. The Kwishwe Bridge currently isn't large enough to support modern groomers. It's designed at 10,000 pounds. Newer groomers are upwards of over 15,000 up to 17,000 pounds. So this bonding will replace a bridge to allow groomers to go back and forth, which is an important part of snowmobiling. That's all I have today. I'll stand for any questions.
All right. Representative Scraba?
Yes. This bridge, I was trail administrator for this area, and this bridge connects the trail system from the North Shore to the rest of Minnesota, actually, in northern Minnesota. It's a vital link. There was a picture of ATVs on the bridge. There's like the side-by-sides. There's like 15 of them on the bridge. And we started doing the math on each, how much they were. Like, they're overweight. All the vehicles on it would have, you know, technically over 10,000 pounds. So it was like, we're going to have to do something. Then the groomer we bought was way too heavy. And then we find out that this bridge, it really is at some point, if there was ever a fire on the Kwishwe Road, this is the only way back into society. Otherwise, they would have to go across a lake to get away from their homes. It's a dead-end road. And so we're not saying that it's going to be for cars, but we need to design the bridge so if something were to happen, we could take more people across it and to get them back into society. So there's a lot of things going on, and this bridge right now, it's pretty integral to just not only just our recreation, but just for safety. And I think we chatted a little bit. I believe the county is going to now take over the bridge. And as you know, bridges are, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, when you stand on this bridge and you look upriver, you actually look into the Boundary Waters. It's like right there.
Oh, wow.
And it's I got tons of pictures here if you want to see them. So it's a beautiful area, and it's a great trail system.
Yes, Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Seeing how the county is going to be taking this over and it potentially could be used for emergency services, could it fall into other sources of funding, the highway trunk funding, that kind of thing?
There's no highway near it.
Representative Scraba.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Allen. There's no highway near it. The only reason we're doing that is it's next to Superior National Forest land, and it takes, that's the reason we're doing that.
Okay.
It's governmental when you're trying to work on federal land with snowmobile club, you got to go to the next higher up. Township doesn't work. County is the next level.
Thank you. Chair Lee, did you have, no? Who? Oh, okay. Representative Sexton.
As far as other funding sources, USDA funds, trail funds, anything else, since there's so many projects out there for bonding?
We
Representative
have,
Scraba?
I'm sorry, Representative.
How long have you been a member
I
of this
am
committee?
So sorry, yes. I am so sorry, Chair. We've looked everywhere. The Forest Service, this isn't part of their system. It's our system. So we're hoping that we can do it with bonding fund here. That's, otherwise we just have to wait. I can tell you I've personally redecked this twice. So it's at its end of its useful life.
Okay. Thank you. Seeing no other further questions or comments, thank you for making your way down to the Capitol today. We appreciate your time. And thank you, Representative Scraba, for being such a great sport in this committee.
Thank you.
I appreciate you, too.
Thank you, Chair.
All right. Next bill up for you is House File 402.
And
Rainier.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, come on in. I have with me Nick Hagan, Public Works Director of the great city of Rainier, Minnesota. It is I got to be careful. It is next to International Falls.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You may state your name for the record and proceed.
Chair Franz, Co-Chair Leader, members of the committee. My name is Nick Hagan, Public Works Director of the City of Rainier, located in Cooch County on the shores of Rainy Lake. I want to start by sincerely thanking Representative Roger Scraba for carrying House File 402 on our behalf. I'm here today to respectfully ask for your support of our request for $300,000 in state bonding to construct a heated public works maintenance building in our city. Rainier is a small city of 589 residents, but our service responsibilities have grown significantly in the recent years. 2010, our city annexed, tripling our residents and roads to maintain. This growth is positive, but has increased a huge demand on our public works department, which is a very small department. Currently, we operate with 2 trucks, snow plows, a bobcat, also riding lawnmowers and your equipment. It sits outside year-round. Right now, we just have a small single-stall unheated garage attached to our community building, which is rented out almost year-round. So when we have people coming in for events, we have nowhere to work. We don't have a restroom to use. Very, very small facility. We're proposing to build a modest, small heated facility to keep our equipment and also work on projects. As a small city with limited tax capacity, we're doing our best to stretch every dollar we can right now, but we need help to provide essential services. This file 402 will allow us to protect city assets, extend equipment life, and continue meeting the growing needs of our community. Thanks again to everyone, and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hagan. So what is your plan if this were to be funded? I'm not saying it is. I'm not making any promises, okay? What is your plan? This is a pre-design, design, construct, furnish, and equip. Is there another phase after this? What is your plan for funding there?
For another phase, we're just looking to get a garage, heated garage funded. There won't be any more phases after that. That'll be it.
So the $300,000, is it?
Yes.
Okay. Ma'am. Thank you. All right. Members, any further questions? Seeing none, Representative Scraba, final word.
Final word. The mayor is a very frugal person. The reason it is so small, because they only need what they need. They're not looking for anything else. And it's a small community, and it's a growing community. So thank you for your support.
Thank you. Thank you for making your way down to the Capitol today. We appreciate your time. Thank you, Representative Scraba.
Next up,
last but not least, Representative Tabke. Let me find your bill. Thank you. 2418, Representative Tabke. Representative Tabke, you have an amendment. You have a DE4. Are you looking to adopt that amendment?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. I move House or the DE4 amendment. And Do you want to explain your amendment?
Yes. So we have, first off, thank you very much, Madam Chair and Chair Lee, for hearing this today. I really appreciate everyone's time on this. This is a project Chair Lee and I have been working on and talking about on and off for quite some time. And so this was is a continuation of his bill that he had last year for making sure that there are capital maintenance programs in place for when bonding money is let to is for local jurisdictions and political subdivisions. And so this amendment is taking what we've been working on, and MMB had a really great suggestion last week for how we can do this simpler and have more clarity for it. And so this amendment is reflecting that work.
Okay. Members, questions, comments? All right. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Tapke, to your bill.
Thank you very much, Chair Franz. And so with this bill, what we are working on, trying, so I'm not asking for any money today, so that's not happening here. This is a policy work that I wanted to get everyone's feedback on and thoughts. We have been working together with League of Minnesota Cities, Coalition Greater Minnesota Cities, Small Cities, and a variety of other folks for this language. And what it will do is requires to have a maintenance, capital maintenance plan for projects that are come through bonding committees, through capital investment. And so what this was born from is in the city of Shakopee, we I used to be the mayor of Shakopee, and so we have funds are available. So when we heard in local government, the city manager came and discussed the funds that were the special revenue funds that are in the city of Shakopee, and those special revenue funds are what are used for maintenance plans, and so for our city. And so what we're trying to do and looking at here is having the same concept for anything that has bonding, so that we don't have continued coming back for additional money for maintenance programs and for other safety programs and things for money that comes through the bonding committee, so that we're able to make sure that that is used for its highest and best use and not for maintenance of projects has been happening often through things. And so this plan, what it will do is it will, on the information provided from cities on bonding requests, it will require that they check a box that says whether they have the political subdivision has a plan for maintenance and preservation of the project. And so the goal here, as I said, is to make sure it's very clear that communities are in charge of the maintenance and of the preservation of that project once the state and taxpayers of Minnesota have invested in it. So just like everyone's thoughts, opinions, as we move forward and work on this for possible bill for 2026.
Representative Tapke, I want to thank you for taking the concerns of the members. I know this issue Representative Chair Lee has worked on, Representative Hansen has made suggestions on, so I do want to appreciate the work that all of you have done on this topic. So it's a checkbox, basically, is what I'm understanding. So let's say a city checks no because their population is so small, the tax base isn't quite there, and they check box no. Would the intent to be then, if there is a no check, no, you know, no check. See, I can't talk today either, Representative Scraba. So it's not just you. I got to pick on myself too. Would the intention be to not fund those projects? I mean, let's talk about that.
Yeah, thank you for that question. So the intention, at least my intention, would be simply for information and allowing for the Capital Investment Committee and members to know and understand if there is a maintenance plan available for that. I am of the opinion that if projects are not able to be maintained by that local jurisdiction, that they probably shouldn't be coming through. This, to be very clear, does not apply to things like major projects around wastewater projects and around sewage projects and things like that that run as that have their own sort of funding mechanisms and their own process. This is just for if a city is, for example, coming to the committee for, like, we had a pedestrian bridge project over 169 in Shakopee, and so we had that funded in 2019. And to make sure that the city of Shakopee has a plan for making sure that they don't have to come back to the state and ask for in 20 years when that pedestrian bridge needs to be redecked or whatever is happening for that bridge, that they are now
intending, and they are now intent planning for maintaining that asset going forward.
Thank you for that clarification, Representative Tapke. Members, Representative Hansen, do you have a question at all? No? Representative Scraba.
So is this, I want to use an example. We give money to a community for a fire station. They build a fire station. You want to see the plan. How are they going to maintain that for the next 10 years? Something like that? Is that what you're, I'm still a little unclear.
Representative Tapke.
Yeah, Chair Franzen and Representative Scraba, yes, that's exactly it, is to make sure that that community has a plan for preservation and maintaining that asset into the future, so that once, however many years down the road, that needs to have a new roof or whatever that needs, that's not coming back to the state for more, so that we're able to make sure that we are targeting our investments and not just maintaining other folks.
Representative Scraba.
Yeah, and thank you, Chair. And I did that with a group that was looking for some water main or sewer. You know, I'm like, well, what's your plan for maintenance? And they all kind of looked at each other like, you know, and I'm like, no, you got to have some kind of plan. You know, yeah, we're going to give you the money and you get to build it. And everyone's like, yes, but what about the next group of people that have to do what you're doing now? Are you putting some aside? And I can see where the league and folks are. Again, if you have, not knocking city administrators or managers, but if they have a clue, they'll be doing that, so we don't have to deal with that. But a lot of times it's not that way, or like the chair said, sometimes small communities don't have access to that. And I don't know, I mean, other than saying, hey, maybe you guys should do this, have you thought about doing this? So you just want to make it part of the informational process. Is that what your the plan here is?
Representative Tapke.
Yeah, Chair Franzen and Representative Scraba. Yes, that's exactly it. Is it, this is not saying yes or no whether a project can or cannot move forward. This is simply making sure that we're establishing the intent and making sure that we're establishing the information that and as Chair Franzen and I talked about, like, I would love to be on the bonding committee. It just doesn't work for my life. It would be a problem for me, because I wouldn't be able to attend all the tours and all the things. It just wouldn't work. And so I wouldn't like to be a full committee member if I'm going to commit to it. And this is my contribution on there, is making sure that we're getting the information required, and that everyone has the ability to make decisions based off of that information. So if we have a city that is perpetually and continuously not maintaining the assets that they have, that is a decision, a factor in a decision that will come forward.
Thank you. Representative Sexton.
Thank you, ma'am. Great initiative. In fact, I'm willing to help. I'm looking especially at subparagraph 2, capital project plan required and certification of plan. So the use of commissioners there, what was the vision there as far as a state commissioner, is that county commissioner? It gets to who's doing the rulemaking on different types of projects, for example, wastewater projects, that would lay out what the checklist is for basically how to do capital maintenance and all that versus a road project and things like that. And then who's going to validate it? It says commissioner, but I'm trying to understand a little bit more detail.
Representative Tapke.
Chair Franzen and Representative Sexton. So that is on the bill that we were working on previously, and we're working off the DE4 on this. And that was our attempt at getting how we'd gotten to this point, was that we had kind of, it was a bit tortured. Like, it was, we were trying to find a way to fit a square peg into a round hole kind of thing. And so it required a lot of different pieces. And then MMB recently came forward and said, hey, we have an easier way that we think we can get at the same information and the same plan that you're trying to get to. And that's by including it in, there's, so section 16A, .86 has, that's in the DE4 that we've adopted, has a, it's just adding a piece to the list of things that are required for political subdivisions when they are bringing forward a bonding request. And so it's a much easier, simpler way to make sure that we're getting at that same information that we want to get at. So that's how it's in here now, and so it would go through MMB, and it would work through that same process.
All right, thank you. Any further questions from members? Representative, or Chair Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Tapke, for bringing this bill forward and, you know, carrying this on. We have had several discussions, like you said, and members, I think that this is a good path forward for everyone, so that as we, you know, get submissions from local communities across the state, we get the information on whether they have a plan or not. And I think it's upon us to ask the follow-up questions on whether, you know, that's a something that we should weigh in when we go through and build our bills together. I think the example that I used, you know, for my own city, when you have a $40 million bridge and you have a capital improvement plan, you should have a plan in place to take care of it and not come to the state. And so I think that that's for all of us to consider that, you know, there are projects out there that are very costly. And, you know, if there's no plan to take care of it and 30 years, 40 years down the line, they're asking the state to fund for it again, you know, is that really good for the state of Minnesota going forward? And so just wanted to make sure that as we weigh these different difficult decisions, there's information for all of us to consider. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Lee. And then Representative Tapke, a suggestion that I have, just because I have a lot of apprehension about this topic, and this actually, your amendment helps a lot, but could there be some clarifying language that it does not pertain to the items that you had listed before? So in this checkbox, it could say except for, because there's intent, and then there's what the department can sometimes read into and make their own assumptions.
Yeah, Chair Franz, absolutely. This I have it pulled up here. So 16A.86 is capital project grants to political subdivisions, and so that runs under its own, you know, as I understand anyway, its own world, but we can absolutely add the clarifying language to that without a problem. Yes.
Okay, that would help alleviate some of my concerns.
And can I ask a question?
Yes, Representative Tapke.
And you're specifically concerned about around like water treatment plants and big projects that just a local subdivision cannot handle that follows a different path and that kind of thing, right?
That is correct. What I don't want is for a city to come forward for a water infrastructure issue or sewer issue, and we're being, and you know, they just don't have the population or the tax base to support, and us saying, sorry, you're out of luck.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. Quick question, Representative Allen, and we got to close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have you talked to, like, ran this past, like, the League of Minnesota Cities, Minnesota Association of Townships? Could you dive into that a little bit more, please, Representative?
And Representative Allen, he has done the work with the League of Minnesota Cities, but Representative Tapke, please.
Yep. Thank you, Chair Franz and Representative Allen. I'll use this also as my closing statement for things. I just appreciate it. We've been working really closely with the League, with Coalition Greater Minnesota Cities, with small cities, with a variety of stakeholders who care about this issue. And this is language that we've all agreed upon and come together for it. And they testified in the last hearing that we had on it, but I wanted to make sure that this hearing today was for you all. And so with that, I just appreciate everyone's discussion on this, and we'll look forward to having some more work on this next year.
Thank you, Representative Tapke. And with that, we're going to lay House File 2418 over. Thank you, Representative Tapke, for your work. With that, Representative or Chair Lee, will you please guide us on the next steps?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so we have been thanking members that next week we'll be moving now. I think there's at least three vehicle bills for us. I'll move it out of committee to Ways and Means so that, you know, as Chair Franzen and myself and members of the legislature continue to have conversation on a bonding bill, that we're ready, whether that's in Ways and Means or, you know, if Ways should send it to the floor, that it's ready for us to take action when we have a agreement. And so that's the plan for next week, Chair Franzen. Yes.
Sorry, and you'll be chairing the gavel. Okay, chairing the gavel. You'll be holding the gavel. Whatever. See, I am not perfect either. I pick on all of you, but I got to pick on myself too. All right, with that, we are going to adjourn the committee hearing. Thank you.